You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I'm Daniel Rue, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. The Warriors had a exciting, surprising, intriguing 113-111 win in Portland against the Blazers in a game Stephen Curry did not play in, a game that they looked like they had in hand really early, and then Portland had a huge run. And I wanted to talk about it with Eric Garcia Gunderson. He is a very talented guy, also hosts the Locked On Blazers podcast. We've done a lot of these crossovers. I enjoy talking with him. You could also consider him a Warriors good luck charm because I believe the Warriors have won every time we've scheduled to do one of these podcasts, and it looked close late, but the lucky charm held through. So this is the conversation with Eric. It runs about 28 minutes, I think, and I hope you'll enjoy it. That was a weird but pretty fun game. Do you agree?
Yeah, you know, no Steph in this game, but it was a great game, I thought. I thought it was fun to, it looked like Iguodala was really enjoying the moment of getting a little bit more time out there, it felt like to me. And it was a great finish to this game. Evan Turner played really well. I thought it was an entertaining game. It was fun to see the Warriors get a little grittier.
They certainly had to play a different way to win this game than usual, and it reminded me a lot of those early games in the second round of the playoffs last year when Stephen Curry was still out. He was dealing with the MCL sprain, and the Warriors just had to, basically they had to win ugly against the Blazers, and a couple times they did. I believe they also lost once, and it was like that, you know? I mean, there was that early stretch where when the Warriors went on a big run, and it looked like maybe they were going to take control, but once Portland had, I think it was a 20-2 run to end the first half, it felt like it was going to be nip and tuck the rest of the way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it looked for a minute there, yeah, exactly like you said, that the Warriors were going to blow them out of the water in that first half. They went up by about, I think they were up 21, 51-30 at one point. And then, yeah, they go on a 20-2 run. And I thought during that stretch, it was really what we saw for mostly the rest of the game was Evan Turner playing really well for Portland and Lillard and McCollum also doing their thing. Lillard didn't have as good of a game in this one as he did the other night when he had 33 against Memphis, but they played really well and kind of got this game back, and it was a really tight game from then on. I thought it was very entertaining.
It was, and it got surprisingly entertaining might be a little bit overstating it because the Warriors have had some trouble at the end of games. It got more interesting with the end sequence, which I'm sure both of our sets of listeners will want to hear about. And for me, the play that led up to the final play with Durant getting called for the offensive foul, my feeling is it was a flop, but it was also an offensive foul. So I've talked about it before in relation to the LeBron play and a couple other ones that the Warriors have dealt with recently of a soccer flop. So a soccer flop is where a player, that's what I call it. It's when a player exaggerates legitimate contact. And I believe it was Evan Turner, that's what he did there.
Yeah, I agree, because Durant was trying to get open there, and Turner did a great job of accentuating that contact and drawing the call and drawing the attention of the official, because a lot of times, I think that's why we all often see stars flail a lot, like Draymond Green or Russell Westbrook or pretty much everybody, or Chris Paul is another great example that comes to mind, just because that's how you have to sell the call, because if you don't, you're not going to get the call. And so that's just part of the game, and Turner did a great job of selling the call there, that even, you know, maybe it was an offensive foul, but it might not have gotten called had he not done that.
Right, and as much as it leads to problems with the product that at least I don't enjoy, it is an understandable and likely unavoidable part of it, especially like for me, I'm far more okay with exaggerating legitimate contact than making something out of nothing, because that's just bad. Like it's not sportsmanship. It's nothing like that. But if you're exaggerating legitimate contact, it's on the edge, but I think it's on the right side of the edge, even if I don't like where it turns out.
Did you see that, speaking of flopping, this is an aside, did you see that Dylan Brooks flop where he didn't even...
I was going to reference it. That is the opposite side of this, you know, or the Marcus Smart flopping like a fish, you know, jumping like, oh, I think like he got shot, you know, like those sorts of things are different because the original contact was not legitimate. It's them call seeking. And I would even draw, it's a different thing, but it's along the same lines, a play that's still happening more and more where an offensive player, usually a shooter, jumps into out of their shooting motion into a guy who's like closing out. To me, that's an offensive foul, but you know, it's the same type of idea of doing something that's not a basketball play and there's no other legitimate reason for it. So punish those things. The other ones, I'd love to see him out of the game, but I don't think there's a way to fix it.
Right. You just got me thinking too of another thing when in talking about that. Dame actually drew one of those calls late in this game when the Blazers were trying to make a comeback. He kind of leaned a little bit into, I think it was McAdoo.
It was James Michael McAdoo, yeah.
Yeah, and
who was Dame in the kinda, game for no good reason.
Right, which it didn't make any sense at all, but he kind of leaned to the side a little bit and got that call. But often though, I will say most of the time he doesn't get that call because it's usually not natural.
Right, Kevin Love is actually one of the first people I ever saw get called for an offensive foul on that, which is actually what it should be, because you're basically elbowing a dude who's just jumping by you. Like, that's an offensive foul. You don't usually see it in the process of a shooting motion. But that one I thought was a little bit, was on the marginal side, but I think he was pretty much in his, he was leaning, but he was still pretty much in a shooting motion. It wasn't like he jumped the wrong direction or anything like that. It's on the borderline, but I was more okay with that. It was also such an egregious jump. Like, this gets into an idea that I'm sure you think about this sometimes too, about when a player bites on a pump fake. And this is not the circumstance like when a player, Stephen Curry did this once, he bit on an Andre Miller pump fake from three, and it's just like, no. Like, you'd rather have him shoot the shot, but the logic of it is this. Is it a worse scenario for the guy to shoot the shot uncontested, or like, you know, with a contest of your arm up, or is it worse for you to draw to induce the foul? And with McAdoo, I think the Warriors at that point were up six with like 25 seconds to go. Yeah, he probably makes that shot 35-40% of the time, but he's going to make those free throws a higher proportion of the time, at least to me, than that. So just let him shoot it.
Yeah, it was kind of a dumb play on McAdoo's part to even get in his vicinity at that point when, as you said, the Warriors were up by 6 points at that time, and I might have even been seven. I don't remember which, but it was not that close. And so you can let him have the three and just, you know, move on from there and let him take it and see if he makes it. But yeah, no, Dame drew contact on that and got the free throws. And that end sequence there, Portland did a lot of the quick two.
On that,
they mostly did the quick two until they couldn't at the very end. They got that lucky call, and then Durant slips, and Evan Turner steps back and is wide open for a three, and it's Evan Turner shooting a three-pointer, but he was wide open. It wasn't the ideal look, but I also am not that mad at that look.
No, and he couldn't get to the basket. You know, like, I think that the alternative there, if he's going to shoot just a shot from the future, as he calls it, you know, if he was going to shoot a shot from the future, that a three is better. But if he was able to get to the lane and draw a free throw, there's a possibility that could have happened. But I don't think there was it was definite. And also the clock was running down. And so maybe in his head, whether he knew exactly how much time was left or had a good general idea, that's always hard. You know, like, if there's 5 seconds left, you go, okay, what can I do in 5 seconds? And maybe he could have gotten the drive and either finished it or thrown an alley-oop to Mason Plumlee. But I understand why, even if he was 100% aware of the timing, he might not have been comfortable with that.
No, yeah, exactly. There's no way you can really be mad about the shot that he took there. He made the right call. It wasn't the highest percentage shot, but most importantly in that situation, you need to get a shot. And so that seems to get teams a lot of times finding the perfect shot. And I just think it's preferred to get a shot in that situation. And he did. And Turner played also, I just wanted to say, Turner played really well in this game. He played in 33 minutes. He had 18 points, 6 assists, 4 rebounds. I think the role that they have him playing now, where he's a part of the starting lineup and playing more with Lillard and McCollum together, I think it's been pretty beneficial so far for the team. I mean, they've been more competitive as of late. And actually, that group of three actually rates out positively in the plus minus so far. They've played 255 minutes so far this season, and they are a plus 4.5, which and their defense is respectable, and their offense isn't that bad, and it's been pretty impossible for that team to have that kind of combination so far this season.
And that's pretty impressive considering they played well with no Vonleh. So kudos.
Yeah, exactly. They have Vonleh out there getting. You know, he's kind of out there just as an offensive rebounder, even though he hasn't been. It's weird, right? Because he's like basically taken the two guys with the worst plus minus and put them in the starting lineup.
Vonleh is a tough one because I like him as a player, but he serves a very limited role as a power forward because he doesn't really stretch the floor. And defensively, he's not a great weak side guy. So I still do like him as a rotation player and potentially long term. And it's certainly true that with Harkless still on the mend and so many other things still going on, that they have fewer options than usual. But they don't do themselves any favors playing him as much as they have.
Yeah, I think it's two things because they tried. I think they want to get some offensive rebounding out of that unit, and I think they need to try and make more out of their front court players who have been, you know, other than Plumlee, really just not really helping the team a lot this season. And they tried Ed Davis in the starting lineup for a little while, but the defensive rating with that group was a 120, and they broke even. But it just wasn't sustainable, really. And I think maybe now they're trying to do something with Vonleh here. Maybe Davis gets thrown into that role. I'm not sure. I think he gives more switchability. But yeah, he doesn't stretch the floor very much. And his best asset right now is crashing the offensive boards. But I think part of the problem is that Portland's bench units have been so bad that maybe the thinking, at least from where I'm sitting, is, okay, Vonleh hasn't really done a whole lot to help you on second units. Maybe what he does well on the offensive glass can help you when the best players are out there so you can get more shots for Dame and CJ. And maybe that's how you do it. And that's how you make some use out of it. Terry Stotts is not in an easy position because, you know, the back end of those rotations have been super tough for him all year. And so putting Harkless and Aminu in there, I mean, I think it worked well tonight having both of those guys come off the bench and you know, kind of stabilize it a little bit.
I think that there's a little bit of a separation from what I've seen of the Blazers between swapping out Harkless and swapping out Aminu, because Aminu has looked good in the starting lineup overall to me, and I understand the idea. It's kind of the Malcolm Brogdon idea, which doesn't usually work, but has worked for the Bucks, of putting in a player who's a little bit different and just seeing it work better for them because they have better teammates. Like, that is an idea that makes some sense. But Aminu was good there. You know, you're not changing something that failed. You're changing something that worked.
Right. Exactly. And that's the odd thing. But I think that's the position that Portland was in, that starting lineup was good, but pretty much every other lineup that they put out there wasn't good. And so I think the problem was Harkless and Aminu out together have been good in that starting lineup, and Aminu has been good in the starting lineup for a while, but now you have this Turner thing and you have to give him minutes. There's no way that they're going to be able to just bench Turner. So I think they had to, this is so far has been the best way to make use of him and to see the team play, to come out in the positive when he's been on the court. It just hasn't happened this year, and it's a very, very small sample size, but I don't blame them for trying something in that regard, because to try and make Turner more useful, because it's just that hole in the rotation where he's been in and they've been hemorrhaging points a lot of the season. He's been better for the past month or so, but it was still hard, I think, and it wasn't consistent enough for them to kind of stick with it on the back end. I think the front end was fine. And I think that's kind of the predicament that they were in.
Yeah, makes sense. It was surprising to see him work in that role because intuitively, like, the reason they brought him in was to be a primary or secondary ball handler when somebody else sits and then try on defense like he did in Boston, which he was much better at tonight than when the Warriors have seen the Blazers, and I watch a lot of the Blazers anyway. He was better than he's usually been this year, which is great. And at the same point, you know, the guy he was on a fair portion of the time, Kevin Durant, also had a nice game himself.
Right. And Kevin Durant is Kevin Durant. And
it's also true.
Yeah. he had a monster game. And it's so funny, right? Because it did. I totally agree with you. What you mentioned at the top of the show, that it did remind you of those kind of scrappy, win ugly games in that playoff series. But the obvious difference is that Harrison Barnes has been replaced by one of the three best players in the world.
Yeah. it was a continuation of something that I've been following but haven't written or talked about, that Kevin Durant has been good to great. I think he's been great a lot of the last few weeks, but he has not been making his threes. So he was 1-for-7 tonight. Over the last, I believe it's 6 games, he has only made more than 35% of his threes once and more than 30% twice, and yet still has played well. It's not what you think of with Kevin Durant, and it's surprising, and it probably won't continue, but still very interesting.
It's so funny with Durant, too, because he's such an efficiency monster that he went 1-for-7 from three and still shot 50% from the field overall and had 33 points. Like,
he scored 33 points on 26 attempts despite shooting 1-for-7 from three.
Like, that's pretty awesome. And then also tonight, I mean, I thought the Blazers scrapped pretty hard defensively in this game too, for the most part, compared to where they've been most of the season. And to their credit, they have been better as of late, but it's gotta kill you when Iguodala goes 3-for-4 and you're just like, okay, well, I guess we lost. You know, that's how you got to take it. If Iguodala is going to make 3-of-4 and that's how you lose, I mean, that's the Warriors beating you right there. And tough break, but that's the Warriors.
They have a narrow rotation, but the guys in their narrow rotation are pretty good. And I would say a few guys on Golden State did not play particularly well today. Klay Thompson had a few solid defensive moments, but offensively, he was missing a lot of open shots. It was not the strongest game from him, except that he ended up making a ton of free throws late. I think it was padded a fair amount by that end part. And those were important free throws. I'm not dusting them off like, oh, that doesn't mean anything. It's just that it's a little bit different than getting to the line a lot throughout the whole rest of the game. And Draymond Green had some huge moments. He had some nice defensive plays in the last minute, including, I would say, a good defensive play on the last gasp of the last possession. But also had 7 turnovers, and a couple of them were just completely, like, egregiously bad mistakes, and a couple of just terrible shot choices.
Yeah, it wasn't the best game for the Warriors tonight, but like you said, though, in that last minute, Draymond was making big plays on the defensive end, and Klay hit a big three-pointer in transition after Draymond got a block on Plumlee in that last minute where Plumlee was driving to the lane. I think it was a 4-point game at that point, and then Draymond just stymies him at the rim like that he did so often in that series, and they just go the other way. Klay hits one of his 2 3-pointers on the night, and that's kind of what got them into that foul game where Portland.
Yeah, that's when Lillard drew the 3-shot foul, I believe, is the next play.
Right. Yeah. So they were that was what started the kind of back and forth at the end that got it close, but the Warriors made enough of those clutch plays at the end of this game in a game that they had to fight for.
They did. And I don't know that you walk away from this game, and this is true of so many regular season games for both of these teams, I don't know that you walk away having learned anything, but it was certainly engaging and fun for all the reasons we discussed.
Right. Yeah, I think it was cool for me to at least watch the Warriors with this team without Curry, having Durant be more of a focal point and all that, and Portland having a game where they've been playing well lately. You didn't learn a whole lot, but it was just a good game and it was an entertaining game. And is this it for the season series,
for the regular season?
That's right. Yeah. Well, we're going to have a 1-8 series if things hold. I mean, I know Denver is technically ahead of Portland, but I think that Portland still has, you know, a great chance to snag that 8 seed.
I think Portland's the favorites. I'm becoming a little bit less certain, not because of this game. I thought Portland played pretty well overall, but just overall that they haven't walked away with it yet because they've been healthy, but they're not all the way. They got Harkless back today. So if in the next 3 weeks, if they don't push it a little bit, then I'll start to be more concerned, but they have to be considered the favorites right now.
Well, I would say that I agree with you, just because from what I've seen from Denver, the times that I've tuned in, I mean, Jokic is great, but there's not a whole lot else there that I believe in.
They play no defense.
Yeah, yeah. Malone has consistently had to call them out in the press and say that they're the worst defensive team in the league. And they're a super young team. Old, at least a lot of their key players are really young. So, yeah, I just don't really believe in them a whole lot. They win games. They score a ton of points sometimes. But, yeah. And then New Orleans, Davis is great. I just don't really believe in the pieces around him enough to get it done down the stretch. So I think Portland with Lillard and McCollum, and if this, you know, change in the rotation and starting lineup and this stability in the back end of the rotation works out, then yeah, they should be able to pick things up over these next few weeks and really distance themselves a little bit from the rest of that pack.
I was putzing around the Blazers schedule just now, and they only have 3 home games in February, which is a little bit weird, but they don't, you know, their schedule isn't that brutal. It's just that they have a lot of road games.
Right. And they've had a lot of extra time at home too, over this past week. I think they had a 3-day layoff or something like that in between games where they were able to, chill out. And yeah, no, the schedule is not that great from a travel standpoint, but they do have the All-Star break and stuff like that. So they'll be able to get some rest in between, but, yeah, they really got to take advantage of these next 2 home games though. I think Charlotte has been up and down, and they beat Portland pretty badly a couple of weeks ago in Charlotte, and then Dallas, who beat the Blazers at home in December without Dirk, so that's a little bit of a revenge game for Portland too that they got to take care of this week.
I feel like I have to ask you, just because I ask other teams' writers or podcasters in this case a lot, what did you think of JaVale McGee tonight?
He was fine. I think he's been fine a lot. I think he's okay. I think he's good on this team. I think, like, every time I've watched JaVale on the Warriors, and I watch the Warriors a lot as well, just in whenever I'm watching other teams, and I feel like he's fine. He's good. He's good on this team, I feel like. What do you think?
That's pretty much where I am. He's not perfect in every matchup, but he can do well enough in a limited role. And the team is getting more comfortable at understanding what he does well and what he doesn't do well. And offensively, he's been wonderful because he hustles and he does exactly one thing well. He can jump up and he can catch the ball after running the floor. And the Warriors know how to use that. They know how to incorporate a guy who is more limited. You know, he's substantially worse offensively than Mason Plumlee, but the Warriors can just, he has an incredibly low usage role. And I'm not saying he's better than Plumlee, obviously. But what I'm saying is that I don't think they need that extra versatility in that player. It's great to have, but it's not essential.
Yeah, I think sometimes, I've talked about this a lot of times in reference to the Blazers, and I've talked about this a lot of time earlier in the season when I was comparing Evan Turner to Gerald Henderson. Now, Evan Turner is a more versatile player, but I think for the role that maybe they had Turner cast in earlier for most of the season, coming off the bench and being a wing off the bench, I think Portland just needed a guy that can just make straight decisions, and he's just going to get some baskets and just going to defend, and maybe he's not the great passer, but I feel like Henderson just had a better understanding of kind of just going quickly and not really slowing down, and he didn't need to think a lot, whereas Turner's game requires a lot of thinking and stuff like that. And I think Henderson in that role probably fit Portland better. And I think the point you're making about JaVale, he doesn't need to be, like you're saying, a versatile, you know, everything type of guy. You know, he doesn't need to be in the death lineup to be an effective part of the team. And he's good at catching the ball, running the floor, and he's dunking like that. And that's important. You need a guy that can do that.
It also harkens back to the discussion we had on Vonleh, where you said, and you're right, that he doesn't need to be a part of the death lineup. Like, he doesn't need to play crunch time minutes, but JaVale arguably does better with better teammates just because they know how to get him involved. Granted, that's also because the Warriors' best players are also their best passers. That is not always true. You know, there are a lot of teams that have good one-dimensional point guards. Jose Calderon is a great example of this. Like, if the Warriors had a Jose Calderon, JaVale would be great with him. But the Warriors' best player, you know, their best 4 passers are probably all, well, depending on, Draymond's not counted as a small, but they're all on that end. You know, Curry, Iguodala, Draymond, and then maybe Durant. He throws some really bad passes, but maybe Durant is that 4th guy. So, yeah, you can make that work with the center.
Yeah, I think you could definitely make it work with JaVale. So, yeah, and what's it? I mean, why does McAdoo playing more than him?
Because Kerr trusts him.
Okay. I mean, that makes sense. He's been in the system for a while.
It does. And Kerr has just this... It wouldn't be a concern if it hadn't been for, like, Game 7, actually, after Bogut got hurt in the finals, where Kerr went back to the guys he was comfortable with, even though they weren't good. And that was, you know, Anderson Varejao getting minutes in the second half of Game 7 of the finals. Festus Ezeli getting put in a tough circumstance when he wasn't playing well, you know, not going to Draymond at center lineups as much, even in crunch time situations. All of those things run together. Like, Kerr is fundamentally more conservative than I think some people give him credit or blame for. Like, it's just not a key element of his persona in that way. And he's not in his, like, public, you know, it's not one of those things where the way he talks or, like, his demeanor befits that, but he's actually, like, strangely conservative in terms of his rotations. And it has hurt the Warriors at moments. They're still crazy, crazy good, but it is also what lets teams back into games and what lets teams back into series.
No, interesting stuff. And yeah, I wonder if that's going to be, I mean, I don't wonder. I think that's going to be a really interesting subplot of the Warriors season when they get into those tough games in the playoffs, when the stakes are a lot higher, because, you know, the Game 7 stuff happened and those rotations happened, and he definitely got criticized, but I think some of that got lost in the shot and the stop and the block and all that stuff. So, you know, I think when the playoffs get going again, it'll be interesting to see how that stuff gets parsed when they have series that are going to be more difficult.
If they stay healthy, I don't think there's much of an argument that they have the most talent in the league. So then that puts a lot on the coach if they underperform relative to their expectations. I mean, and it should. It has to. And so we'll have to see. And what's frustrating, and I've talked about this before on Locked On Warriors, and you might be getting there if Portland wins a couple more games, but I have trouble talking about that sort of a thing because we can't learn much of anything for another few months. So you're just kind of sitting there going, well, we'll see what happens in May, you know? Like, we'll see what happens when the games count, and we'll just kind of sit here and watch James Michael McAdoo get 10 minutes in a game when David West is hurt. And, you know, the Warriors are basically only one injury away from Kerr getting into this weird rotation stuff.
It's really interesting stuff. Hey, well, maybe we will talk about this in mid-April.
That would be a lot of fun. I mean, there aren't many more series that I would look forward to in that first round. Any potential opponents that would be more fun than the Blazers.
Well, it would definitely be fun to keep chatting about the Warriors and keep chatting hoops, obviously. And yeah, and I love watching the Warriors too. I think that would be a fun series, no doubt, because ever since that, you know, the 40-point drubbing or the, you know, those two early blowouts, really, Portland has looked a little bit more respectable against the Warriors lately. So, yeah, maybe a series would be pretty entertaining. I think of all the teams that could be in the eighth seed, obviously, I think Portland and maybe Sacramento, you know, with Boogie would give them it would be fun. But yeah, let's hope we see each other in mid-April.
Absolutely. Thanks again to Eric Garcia Gunderson for taking the time to come on for this crossover podcast. You can listen to Locked On Blazers or follow it at Locked On Blazers on Twitter. He often has co-host Dane Carball, and I'm a big fan of Dane's as well, but he was unavailable tonight. And you can also follow Eric on Twitter at Eric_Gunderson. That's Eric_GUNDERSEN. Enjoy following him on Twitter, enjoy talking with him on the podcast, and as we discussed at the very end, this is the last time the Warriors and Blazers play in the regular season. We do not yet know if they will be the Warriors' opponent, presumably in the 1-8 series, but who knows? That would be a lot of fun. I still continue to enjoy it. If you have any feedback on the show, good, bad, or indifferent, you can reach out to me, DannyLarueNBA@gmail.com, at DannyLarue on Twitter. My standard promise, I read everything, respond to what I can. And that will hold true. A couple of days without games for the Warriors, Monday, Tuesday, because then they play Wednesday, Thursday, Wednesday against the Hornets, Thursday in LA against the Clippers. And of course, we'll do podcasts on those. Trying to figure out exactly what to do in the interim days. Probably do the repeat of the schedule analysis and four factors on one of the 2 days. and then also have plenty of stuff in terms of other content to go through. So I will be in the process of figuring that out. If there's anything that you're dying to hear me talk about, you can always reach out and I will take a look at it and consider it. You know, there's probably enough stuff still for another email bag, which people seem to enjoy last week, and plenty of other material as well. So thanks again for listening. Take care and make it a great day.